Welcome back to the Creators Collection. The Iron Table is the series that we've been on, and I am really, really pumped and a little bit nervous about this one specifically because of what we're going to talk about. But I am here with Nathan
Crevier.
I am really thrilled to talk about this because Laverne really talked so highly about you of this topic, and I've heard you talk a few times, and just the eloquent way of you being able to share what God has laid on your heart in the way that is honest and truthful, but also very life-giving. And so the Lord has been so intentional with every person he has put for this 9-week series. And I prayed really hard over every single topic, and God just put the right people in place. And so I believe that whatever is said on here is truly, I think, just coded by the Lord. So I'm excited just to talk about an offended culture. It's one of the biggest issues I think that we have going on in our world, because I honestly feel like it started maybe like around like COVID when the world shut down. I think people got really bored. And through that, all this stuff happened in politics, in genders, and all these different things that we deal with now in our culture. It has now developed into being offended by every little thing. Even if we didn't mean it a certain way, people still get offended. People get offended by the truth, by the word of God.
I think we've become hypersensitive to offending somebody and even ourselves, because I don't think we're used to being offended or confronted by people anymore. I mean, I was just thinking about it today. You know, I don't know if I have anybody in my life who, including my pastor, my parents, and other people, who would just tell me something that I need to hear if it's not going to make me feel good. And I remember in times past having people that would do that. They would just say the honest thing, the thing that needed to be said. And I came to appreciate those people, and I would turn to them if I was unsure about something about myself or something else. And they became very valuable. But those people are not really in my life like they used to be. And I got friends from a long time ago, but something has just seemed to have happened where we kind of keep things light. In fact, I've been dealing with something today as I was getting ready for this. There's a friend of mine. I don't want to say his name, but there's some kind of a thing between us. And I've been so reluctant over the past several months to confront him about that, because we don't do that anymore. And but I just feel this has all kind of inspired me just reading about Jesus. And he's called, you know, it's interesting. It says in here, I never thought of this. I used to have a poster on my wall in my dorm room that had all the titles of Jesus, you know, the shepherd, the great I am, all those things. And it didn't have this one. But I notice in Romans 9:33, it calls Jesus a rock of offense.
I mean, if you really think about it, if Jesus lived in our world, he would offend every single one of us. He really would. Because one thing that has really stuck out with me, and as I was praying and planning over this, just the word like truth and grace. It was full of truth and grace. And we often, as a culture, we like to take the grace part of it. Jesus loves me, this I know, right? But do we ever actually take the other part of it, which is the truth? Like Jesus, yes, he's graceful and he loves us and he sees beyond our mess. But he doesn't just say, okay, like I'll just take it as is and we'll do nothing. He's like, no, like I want to still speak truth into your life, even if it makes you so uncomfortable. Even if you kind of walk away a little bit offended and you're like, oh, like that sucks. Like that is a horrible feeling.
It makes me think of, I read a book not too long ago called No More Mr. Nice Guy. It's not a Christian book, but it changed the way that I thought. And one thing that's come to my realization is that if you had met Jesus in history, you never would have walked away from an interaction with him and described him as nice. You would have said he was good or awesome or maybe even offensive or wonderful or powerful, whatever, but you wouldn't have said nice. But that's kind of like we've devolved in a way into where the default setting for Christians is being nice. Like that's our main way of sharing the gospels. I'll be nice to my neighbors and I'll be nice in every situation. And originally the word nice used to mean somebody who does not add anything or take anything away. Somebody who's a non-factor. They're not an offense. They're not going to get on anyone's nerves, but they don't really add anything to the situation. And it kind of seems like that in a way we're okay with that. I can say for myself that I notice a lot of times I do something to be nice, and like like I'm saying with my friend, I'm trying to be nice with my friend. I don't want to offend him, but we don't talk like we used to. There's not life in our friendship like there used to be because there's this thing. And I was thinking about Jesus, you know, him being a rock of offense. And there's a lot of times he essentially called Peter the devil, or at least.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
That?
Yeah. Just get behind me. See, that's like the worst, you know?
Yeah.
Offense. He offended obviously the Pharisees and the Sadducees. He offended Martha when Martha called for him because her brother was sick. And Jesus seemed to dither around for a couple of days, puttering around for 4 days before he finally came, and he could hear her offense in the fact that he came so late. And Jesus didn't seem to mind that. He even, one time, Mary came to see Jesus, but he was in a room that was full of a crowd. And the people said, "Your mother's outside. She can't get inside. Your mother's outside." And Jesus said, "Actually, you guys are all my mother and my brother and my family." So even his mom, he was not afraid to just say the truth, even if it might risk offense. And so that seems so far and disconnected from my modern Christian life and from everyone I know. Frankly, I'm the kind of person that if somebody else were to show courage, I guess I'm a coward in this way, if someone else were to show courage and do the right thing and take a stand on something, I'd be ready to do it, you know? Like back in the old day, they would
always... So it's like trying to see someone else like do it first and then like...
Yes.
Okay, let me try it now. I could...
Yes.
A little leeway.
Like I know it's the right thing to do. Like I remember being a kid and they had like an altar call for everyone to come up to confess some kind of weakness or whatever. And I would know it applied to me and I wanted to go up, but I wouldn't go up unless I saw someone else break the ice, you know? And that would give me the courage. And I feel like I'm in the same situation, that I know that there are things that I ought to say to people that are close to me because I care about them, but I won't. If I were to see someone else do it, I feel like that give me, yeah, you know, the courage that I need.
Yeah, I think one thing that I think I keep thinking about as you're talking is you had said that there is really no life when you remove being truthful and walking in the way that Jesus walked, in the way he communicated, because I think that affects the way that the church does things too. It's the way, like how we go and make disciples. How can you genuinely make a disciple if you're just being nice instead of being kind? Like I remember having a student one time came to my office. This is back when I did collegiate ministry. And I remember he was sitting there. He's like, "I don't think that you're nice." And he paused and I was like, "Okay, that's kind of rude." And he's like, "But I think that you're kind." And I was like, "Okay, what does that even mean?" Because I always thought, okay, it's kind of similar. And he's like, "Well," he's like, "if you read scripture, you never hear the word really nice." He said, "But you always hear about being kind, that Jesus calls us to have the fruit of kindness in us." And I remember just sitting back and being like, wow, like that's the first time I've ever heard someone really explain it that way to me. And I think not too long after you had talked about it at one of the Free to Be Real discussions. And I just remember just the Lord just really pouring out of how, like, if we're going to deal with an offended culture, we should not have the posture of being nice, but always have the posture of being kind.
Right.
And because you're doing an injustice to that person, knowing that, okay, they're not doing what they need to be doing. And I'm just, as a bystander, just sitting back, letting them eventually fall off the cliff. So what is that? How am I being a brother or a sister in Christ by doing that? And so that's where we have to really examine ourselves, because I think an offended culture is a hard issue. It's not a political who stands here, who stands there, you know, that kind of a thing. But it is genuinely a heart problem of like, why am I so easily offended? Where is my heart posture that has led up to where sometimes we wake up in the morning already offended? You know, so how do you think that the posture of our heart affects the way we live in an offended culture?
I think that I'm guessing that because we don't, most of us, I speak for myself mostly, but I haven't heard anyone else talk about it either. So most of us don't have somebody that we trust that will speak into our life and tell us the thing that we need to hear, right? That it might be offensive. And so we kind of are become sensitive to the point where any confrontation is, I think a lot of us associated with rejection, because people have used criticism or a confrontation or a problem to reject somebody. You know, "We can't do this. You can't be in this group because you did dot, dot, dot." or we're not going to hang out anymore because you said this. Mm. We cancel people. People get left out. People get ostracized. And so there's this association in our heart with, here's a problem, so that's the reason why you can't be a part. That's the reason why I'm withdrawn. And so I think because of that, we don't have the experiences of having somebody come to us and say something that might hurt us or offend us, but they say it because they don't want us to be excluded, because they want to draw us in closer. You know, they want to strengthen us. And so I think we're just, and I think social media has a lot to do with it. Because all our interactions are so shallow, and you wouldn't say something offensive to somebody else unless you're prepared to just push them off the deep end, you know?
I recently read an article. It's on, I think, the Medium, like, magazine or whatever. A guy wrote in, and I was reading through the whole thing, and this one statement really stuck out to me. And I sometimes wonder if it's true. And he said, if you are offended by criticisms, then I have to say you are part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, man, like, that mm-hmm. is really is true, though. Like, mm-hmm. I my personal opinion on that is, it is true mm-hmm. that we need criticism. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between criticism and an insult. Mm-hmm. Criticism, it should help you to mm-hmm. become better. Like, mm-hmm. if I never allowed people to critique me, I would still be the same person right. I was 10 years
you
ago.
Wouldn't grow.
Exactly. I would think that I'm okay, mm-hmm. that I'm perfectly fine, but mm-hmm. I could be a horrible person. Mm-hmm. But no one really felt allowed to mm-hmm. really speak into my life. And so I think that with culture today, like you said, social media and all those mm-hmm. things, we're afraid to really be honest. Mm-hmm. We're afraid to be vulnerable. We're afraid to really be truthful mm-hmm. in our life, because you're criticizing me too much.
Right.
You cross that line.
Right. I think there's a general shallowness. I think, like, friend used to be defined as somebody who you had a trusting relationship with that you would argue with and get through it on the other side and be closer still. And now friend, whether we meant to or not, is defined more like an associate or an acquaintance. And so it's really a much more shallow relationship. I think collectively we think of it that way. And not only can we not take offense, but people, I notice as a teacher that students in particular, but I think everyone in general, we're hungry for affirmation. Mm. We're hungry for affirmation. But even affirmation becomes really shallow, and it's just like flattery, you know? It's not genuine often. It's just, I'm going to say something nice to you for some ulterior motive, but it's not really well thought out. It's a generic, you're good, you know, I like you. Yeah. But I find that if you can find something specific and good in somebody and call that out, I think people would be more willing to give you permission to speak into their life in a way that might bring offense, because they know you're not trying to reject them. You're not coming up with an excuse to say, we're not going to hang out anymore. But you see the good in them. And so I think part of the reason why people don't receive offense, don't receive anything that's a criticism, is because they don't see that the person who's coming with that criticism cares about them mm. or loves them or sees the good in them. And so they take it as an all-out attack on their person. And you know, I've heard people say if you're going to say something negative, you should use a compliment sandwich. So you say something nice, then you say what you really want to say, and then you say something else nice. Which I think there's some wisdom to that, but that can sound like a formula too. I had a friend of mine who would always say something really shallow as a positive thing just to have permission to really lay into me. And, you know, if you don't get that sense that the person really cares, you're not going to listen to them, you know, unless you're exceptionally wise. If you're exceptionally wise and mature, you would take even the criticism of your enemies and say, I wonder if it's something.
So do you think that I know you said it, but like wisdom does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, man, like that is, there's a lot to that I could say, but I think it's true. I think we don't even take the time to gain wisdom. Mm-hmm. I think we love the idea mm-hmm. of wisdom, but really do we actually take the time in the process of someone sitting down with us and being mm-hmm. honest with us, taking that, receiving that, and say, what wisdom mm-hmm. can I receive from this? Mm-hmm. Instead, people are like, oh, no, it's not automatically, like, it's not going to help me. Mm-hmm. Like, you're already my enemy. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just one of my haters. You know what I mean? Like, those type of things. And it's foolish. It's foolish to think that we think we know better. Mm-hmm. And scripture talks about that. Mm-hmm. You know, the so wise people mm-hmm. of this world are foolish. Mm-hmm. And the foolish become wise. And so I think that we have to take a step back and mm-hmm. say, what do I need to learn mm-hmm. today? Where is it in me that needs to grow? Mm-hmm. And I know that even through Free to Be Real, we talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Growth is an option. Mm-hmm. It's an option that we have to choose. And so in this offended culture, that culture doesn't want to grow. Mm-hmm. That culture says, I want to live in the past. I'm going to bring up what somebody did 10 years ago and bring it to light and say, okay, there's still this person to this very day. There was no growth, no grace, no development, no nothing. And it's not giving that person even the space to even say, no, like, I have grown, or like, give them the opportunity. It's an automatic, no, like, you are done. Like, mm-hmm. you are now exempt from the culture.
Right.
And it's not life-giving. Mm-hmm. It's sucking away from what God has established, which is relationship. Mm-hmm. And the enemy has wrapped culture by its finger and saying, I want you to be offended. Mm-hmm. I want you to take what someone said, assume that they meant it in this way. Mm-hmm. I want you to be mad at them. Never tell them that you were mad, but mm-hmm. just kind of just put them to the side.
I wrote down quiet quitting. Mm. Like, that's what we do with our friends is, I don't know if you've heard that term, but mm-hmm. They talk about, like right now is a big phenomenon in the workplace, especially from the younger generations, where if they don't like their job, they do what's quiet quitting, which is just do bare minimum.
Oh yes, I've seen that. I have seen that everywhere. Yeah. People talk like they take it as a pride thing too.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, like I'll just leave.
Right, exactly.
Or I'll show up maybe late to work.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like that we do that in our friendships too. We won't say, hey, here's this problem. Let's deal with it. We're just like less and less. We don't talk to them as often. We don't hang out with them, or we just super polite when they're around, but talk to our friends about the problem instead of to that person, you know?
So what is the first step for us, especially as believers? Like, what is the first step that we should have in this culture that is rampantly just taking on this young generation, that they're growing up and that's the way that they view how to communicate, mm-hmm. they view how to do relationships, how to handle careers. Mm-hmm. What's the first step for us to take in that of saying, okay, no, like, we're not going to allow this to mm-hmm. happen. Let's kind of pivot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of things come to mind, but from this whole thing, I'm being challenged to talk to this friend of mine and to do, you know, the confronting. It's not because, you know, because there's a part in the Bible that talks about, we're called to bear with one another. In Ephesians, it says we should bear one. It says all over. Paul says it often, we should bear with one another. And then John, 1 John chapter 5 talks about there are some sins that lead to death and some sins that don't. And so essentially, you need to discern whether this is a sin that you should confront someone about or not. We don't need to be confronting everybody about everything. There's some things that we just need to bear, you know? Mm-hmm. There's certain personality quirks about members of my family. I can't ask someone to change their personality. I'm just going to have to bear with their person, accept that, you know? But there are certain things that are leading to a destruction of the friendship, of a life-giving friendship, or leading to the person's own destruction or their life ebbing away. And so I feel like that's the situation with this friend of mine, and I feel a challenge that the step for me is to not keep putting it off and say, well, next week or whatever, today, you know, to talk to that person and say, I just want to talk to you and share from my heart. And it might be awkward because I haven't done that in a while, but walk through that, you know. But also something else that came to mind is, I have to understand that Jesus is in this. It's not like I have to confront someone on my own, or that if I somehow do things wrong, it's going to be a big blow up. You know, if Jesus is in this with me, it's because his heart is for that person. Through me, perhaps he wants to, you know, do something. And probably in that situation, there's going to be something that comes back that I need to hear that would be life-giving for me in that conversation. And so Jesus is all about that. He's about us having those close relationships with people that we can trust, that we can come to when we are unsure about something and say, could you be honest with me, and know that they would be honest. So I think that he's going to walk us through that, you know, and he's going to give inspiration and clarity about, yeah, this is something you need to deal with, and this is something you just need to bear, yeah. You know?
Yeah, there's two things that you said that I think that are so powerful is, one, Jesus genuinely cares for that person. Mm. And two, include Jesus at the beginning of that, mm-hmm. because I think a lot of times we want to go into conversation with ourselves, mm-hmm. like not even let Jesus right. know about it. Like, I'm going to go in here, I'm going to say what I need to say
yes.
in the heat of the moment. Mm-hmm. But really, like, there's no wisdom in that. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes you got to take a step back and mm-hmm. say, okay, did I do something wrong first? Or being like, okay, like, let's evaluate this. Like, let me right. go to the Lord about this.
Right.
And allow him to provide us that discernment, to provide us that wisdom
right.
and that compassion and grace. Mm-hmm. Because we as people, we have no compassion or grace.
Right.
You know, we're selfish. We want things for ourselves. We want to flip tables all day. Mm-hmm. We want to do mm-hmm. all these things. But in the end, is it life-giving or is it taking away mm-hmm. life? And so
that's a good way to look
that at. Is something that we have to always be examining. And that's even something in my own life I'm constantly having to take before the Lord of saying, okay, God, like, am I adding mm-hmm. to
right.
to your name? Like, right. am I representing you in the best way,
right.
in a way that is honorable, or am I not?
Mm-hmm.
And allowing the Lord to really speak into that. And mm-hmm. so I think that that's the way that we should be approaching mm-hmm. it, like you said, like allowing God to be first and allowing mm-hmm. God to speak mm-hmm. into us to whenever we do have that conversation,
mm-hmm.
it is so spirit led.
Because
I've had hard conversations with people before where, you know, I myself could have definitely said something totally different
right.
that would have not been well, but really praying through and saying, okay,
right.
God, like, what do you want me to say
right.
to this? And sometimes it's just me listening.
Right.
I think that sometimes we don't even take the time to do that. It's
yes.
just to pause and listen. I think we just want to talk and
yes.
talk all day. But really, do we take enough time to look at the person and say,
right.
I want to hear you.
Right.
And just
really
say what
listen.
You need to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I know I have a tendency when I was at, I went to Bible college and they taught us, it's the strangest phenomenon. I can't believe they taught us this. I didn't think about it until years later. They taught us, I think it was like 5 or 6 different ways to show that you're listening in a counseling situation. So they talked about your posture and your eye contact and, you know, repeating back what they said in your own words. And I realized, looking back on it years later, that they never actually taught us how to listen, how to actually listen. They taught us how to indicate that we're listening, how to basically look like we're listening. And I found that in relationships, my marriage in particular, that I was really good at behaving like I was listening. But I realized as time went by that I wasn't hearing my wife. I wasn't really, really listening. I was letting her talk. And sometimes even just while she's talking, thinking about what I'm going to say next and not really in my heart trying to understand what she's getting at and where she's coming from. And so, you know, I think praying, like you said, beforehand, to find out what is the real issue, because I might think the issue is this, because this is what's annoying me. But I can't tell you how many times in time when I used to do this, when I would confront somebody about this issue, and then I realized, well, wait a minute, there's actually a really bigger issue that's going on in that person's life, or even in my life, you know. And so if you go in with a speech prepared of, I need to accomplish this, I need to get them to accept that, I think that's exactly what you're saying is not life-giving. But going in prayer and saying, this is a heart thing. There's a heart issue between me and this person, and we need to address that, even if it's gonna offend them.
I mean, I've learned from just different people who they have a way of being able to make you feel like, man, like they are really tuned in mm-hmm. to what I'm saying, mm-hmm. even if it's something small. And it was so life-changing mm-hmm. to me. And I think that in the end, offended culture is just people that are hurt,
mm-hmm.
genuinely
mm-hmm.
hurt and broken and dealing through some things that they may have never had someone look at them and say, mm-hmm. I just want to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just say what you need to say
mm-hmm.
and allowing them that space.
Good.
And I mean, when COVID happened, because this is where I feel like a lot of it really kind of stemmed out mm-hmm. of, people were in their homes mm-hmm. to themselves with their thoughts, really struggling. And I think that has never mm-hmm. really left them. I think that sense of loneliness, that sense of, you know, anxiety, depression, the things that they had walked through, I think that is still mm-hmm. there. And a lot of times our responses are kind of like that hurt dog mm-hmm. that kind of just, you know, bites and barks mm-hmm. and all those type of things. But it's not until you really start nurturing them, mm-hmm. telling them, hey, like, it's safe. You're safe mm-hmm. with me. Then it's okay. There's that. You're mm-hmm. getting to see a little bit more of that softer side. Mm-hmm. You're getting to kind of break through that exterior that is hurt, offended, bitter, whatever. And so I think in the end of the day, like, we have to be, as believers, we need to be able to listen more mm-hmm. than just talking away. Mm-hmm. Because Jesus did that. Mm-hmm. Jesus listened. And I can imagine the things he probably mm-hmm. heard, that he's probably like, okay, come on. Mm-hmm. Come on, Sally. Like, you mm-hmm. know, I've heard this before. But he still was so intentional. And mm-hmm. that's one thing that I just love when I read about the Lord and just his heart mm-hmm. is the amount of intentionality mm-hmm. he has for his people. Mm-hmm. Because by now, he probably could have wiped us away and said, I'm done with this. No, like, he chooses to sit with us daily. He mm-hmm. wants to sit with us daily. He wants to know our problems. Mm-hmm. He wants to know what hurts us, what makes us laugh, what mm-hmm. makes us sad, all these different things. And a lot of times we expect people to be the same exact way as God. We put this God expectation on a person and end up feeling hurt because this person didn't hear me this one time. This mm-hmm. person didn't do this one time.
I've noticed recently, I think, like you said, since COVID, and of course, it's been so politically polarized. It's just, you know, that charges everything in such a way. But I've noticed that family gatherings the last couple of years, that everybody's talking and nobody's listening. And I've listened to some, like,
Uncle Tom is over here chatting away. No one's listening.
Yes. Well, and like two of my family members that are talking apparently to each other. You would think if you just look and know they're having a conversation with each other. But if you listen to what they're saying, this person's saying their thing, which has nothing to do with what this person's saying. They're just waiting for a break that each person gives them so they can say more of what they're saying. So you can tell they're really not listening. They're just, but it made me feel, it's funny, but it made me feel like I think people aren't listened to. I think people feel like there's no one who's listening. And so they're going to get their thing out, even if nobody really listens. But we're so desperate to be heard, and nobody's being heard. And I really, you know, I just go back to social media. I mean, my friends make fun of me because it feels like I rail against everything in modern culture. But, and I'm sure there's a way to manage all of that in a godly way. You know, there's a way to be on Facebook in a godly way. There's a way to engage in all of those things. I feel like our generation, there's been so much technological advances, which has to do with human relationship. It's happened in such a short span that our generation hasn't really had the time to mature enough with those things, by and large. You know, obviously some have, but mature enough with these things and learn how to let them have their proper place without it consuming and replacing. There's no reason why social media should be replacing human relationships and friendships. And it feels like that has for many of us. There's something that's social media is not evil, but there is something that is deeply unhealthy about social media replacing relationship, because it's not at, because of these things right here. There's not. I remember one of my last roommates before I got married. I remember when we first started hanging out and we were about to be roommates. I remember saying to myself, because I had had enough of experience at that time, we need to get into an argument so that we can kind of get past that. Basically break the ice. You know, we need to have an argument and yell each other and offend one another and then talk that through so that we have that language and that ability to be able to do that. And it feels like that thing is gone. But I remember thinking how awesome my friendships become after an argument. I remember getting to that point where I think arguments are good if you can follow through to a resolution, you know? And I think Jesus was about that. Jesus was about saying, I'm going to say something right now that I know is going to make you upset, and I'm going to say it anyway. And I'm not just going to say it and drop the mic, you know, and walk off and do something else, you know.
He wanted, just like you said, break the ice. He broke the veil. And I think that a lot of times the veil in us is not, you don't want it to be torn apart. But Jesus said, like, if you're going to allow me to really go in there, I got to tear it apart. I got to step in there into the uncomfortable and bring life to what has been dead in you. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. It's not easy. And there's days where you're like, really, Lord, like we're going to do this again today. Like, but when you look at the end of it, like you said, there's the resolution is so much greater than the initial confrontation, the initial action. And all in perspective, we have to really examine that, the perspective of this. So what are we expecting out of this? Are we expecting solution, restoration, or are we expecting just hurt, bitterness, resentment? And the enemy's going to try so hard to bring that division. Yeah. We have to be aware of that division.
Because I it's funny you say that, because I was just thinking this one thing that was on my heart is an offense held on to us in our heart is toxic. And we don't want to acknowledge that. But if you think about it, if you're the kind of person that's a modern Christian, from my experience, I would say in my experience, there's not many people that I have a tough conversation with or have that tough conversation with me. And so that's the deal. You're being offended. People are doing things that are getting to you, but you're just stuffing that down inside and dealing with that and breaking away from that person. That is toxic. And the devil knows that. That's not good for your mental health. It's not good for your spiritual health just to hold on to something that builds bitterness. You know, the Bible talks about bitter root causing a loss to many people. And this is the way. In fact, Jesus says, you know, if you're offended, somebody sins against you, his advice is, A, first step, confront them. Go and talk to them. Then go and talk to them with someone else if that doesn't work, or with the church. You can see that Jesus is concerned about someone's sense of shame. Jesus doesn't want to bring shame. He doesn't want us. We're not in partnership with him to bring shame on somebody else by talking about something that might hurt or offend them. And you can see he's careful. Let's do this privately if we can. Let's do this where someone's not going to feel all the eyes are on them or be especially humbled or shamed by the experience. But you know, if it comes to that, this is such an important thing that offense becomes or is dealt with. It's such an important thing that we may have to risk doing something that's public. You know, we may have to risk that. And so I just feel like, you know, I'm just thinking about now, I'm probably carrying things around inside me that I'm not even aware of that are affecting my spiritual life, because, you know, it's also true. I think in my life, I've become a little more mature in a lot of things. I'm just bearing with people, things people have said to me and done that I'm actually okay with it. I don't feel like I'm carrying around, but obviously I'm carrying around with this one guy, you know, that I didn't go and talk to. So that's the devil. That would love for me to have all of these toxic.
Oh, yeah. All that junk. It's like, I'd rather you live in that.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a couple years ago, I really dealt with just a lot of bitterness, and that bitterness translated into being offended by things. Mm-hmm. And probably like back in 18, 19, me and one of my brothers, we had not gotten along. Like, it's just a lot of years of different layers of just different things. And I remember, like, it got to the point where we couldn't even be in the same room. Like, it was really difficult for, like, I would automatically just not be happy when I knew he would come home or he would be like visiting with my mom. I was just like I don't want to be in the same room. And I knew that that was not a good thing, but I didn't know how to deal with it. So I wasn't one that really vocalized everything I felt, those type of things. But I knew that for probably like 2 years of that, I walked in that, just this slow boiling bitterness in me. And I remember the Lord saying, like, we got to deal with this. And it got to the point that the Lord did not stop. It was almost like this prodigal moment. Like, he didn't stop chasing me in that bitterness because it was completely just sucking the life out of me. It was affecting my relationships. It was affecting my relationship with the Lord. It was affecting the way that I served, like, so many aspects of my life. It was consuming. And in that bitterness, because, like, not just my brother, but, you know, from other people being hurt by different situations, everything became an offense to me. And so I carried this guard and almost like kind of like that hurt dog. And I remember it was, I mean, right before, I think, the pandemic, honestly. But I remember me and my family, we were in Missouri, and I was like, man, like, I, God, like, I don't want to walk with this for the rest of my life. I don't want to feel this hurt for the rest of my life. And we were going back to the hotel, and I'm listening to music, and the Lord just met me in that moment in the back of that car. And I, like, just felt this, just the presence of the Lord, and the Lord just gave me this vision. And I was just, like, on this rock, and it was just me, but nobody else, in like this forest type, and I was just overlooking this beautiful lake. All of a sudden, I really just felt like Jesus met me on that rock. I just felt so broken. I felt just lost. I just, all this hurt I was just carrying by myself. It was almost like this vision of like having just scars all over me, picking at it and just living in it. And the Lord sat with me and he's like, look, like I took this with me so you didn't have to. So you didn't have to live with this. I took that for you. And I just felt like the Lord completely took every scar and placed it on himself. And it's almost as if yesterday, I remember the feeling and the Lord just brought wholeness to a place that no one could ever bring wholeness to. He's like, look, like I have, like, you know what love is and I have given that to you. And so now go and live the life I've called you to live. And I remember like just quietly sobbing in the back of the car, just having a moment with the Lord. And in that moment, I felt this restoration of, okay, like now I need to have this conversation with my brother. Now I need to forgive and ask for forgiveness. I remember it was like not too long after that, just continuing to pray over this. Okay, God, give me a forgiving posture. My family had come over, everybody was here, and we sat at the dining table. And I was like, look, like I got to just say this here and now. You know, I've walked, and I explained to him, like, I walked through all this bitterness, and it's affected the way that we mingle and our family and everything. And the Lord brought so much restoration in that moment that it wasn't just me and him, but it was his wife, our whole family, witnessing this in that moment. And I just felt the grace of God all over that, because to your version from that moment, I would have never, I would have been flipping that table. I would have been just so different, but God had to work on my heart first and bring wholeness first before I could possibly ever have a conversation with someone that, yeah, offended me at one point. Yeah, hurt me at one point. And so I'm a firm believer that in this culture that we live in today, it genuinely is just people that are hurting. And I understand that feeling of being hurt and not knowing what to do with it. But I also believe that Jesus, he is that balm to our hearts that brings that wholeness that we need in order for us to sit across that person who hurt us and say, I forgive you.
You know, it's, I think it's a miraculous. I don't think that in our human strength that we can genuinely forgive. I think what humans do is like forgiveness is just to move on or, you know, but to genuinely forgive, like to really wish that the other person does not receive any punishment for what they did to you, to totally freely pardon them and have a free relationship between you and them, I think is a sign of the presence of the Holy Spirit, because it's his power alone that can enable us in our hearts to have the freedom to let go. I know for me, a lot of times when I've been unwilling to forgive somebody, it's because it's really a surrender of control. Like I think to myself, if I just don't punish this person or at least make them feel bad for what they've done to me, then they might do it again to me. And so the way to keep control and to protect myself is to make them pay somehow when they do this thing. But it's really toxic. It's something the devil wants you in, because you really, when you refuse to let go, you really, you know, there was a missionary that talked about the way, I think it was in Asia, where they would catch monkeys. They would take a melon and tie it to a tree, and they would scoop out the melon, and they would leave this little tiny hole just big enough for a monkey to get its fist in. Have you heard this before?
No.
Okay, just tiny enough for the monkey to get its hand inside. And then inside the melon would be all different kinds of fruit. So the monkeys would come and they would reach in the hole with their hand. They'd grab the fruit, but then they couldn't get out because their fist was too big and they wouldn't let go. You could walk right up to them. They'd be wild. You could walk right up to them and put them in a bag. They wouldn't let go of the fruit under any circumstance.
Wow.
And it's like us. It's like the devil traps us that way. We are holding on to something, which is like control or an offense, or we need to get paid back so that person knows not to do that again. And so much so that we trap ourselves to the point the devil just scoops us right up, you know?
That's a word.
And keeps us ineffective.
Wow. It really is. Like, we have genuinely a lot of times allowed the enemy at a seat at the table and feasting with us. And we don't even realize it. And I think that really we have to be aware that the enemy is not here to be your friend. He's here to steal, kill, and destroy. that's his role.
Right.
And he will try to convince you of that control. He'll try to convince you of different things. And we see that in our world today. You know, we are like those monkeys who are holding on to things. And then the enemy just comes in and easily just scoops us in.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, how did this happen?
Right.
How did I get to this place? Because we weren't willing to let go of baggage in our life.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's going to take 2 seconds, you know, for you to have like full restoration of everything. But it's saying, okay, God, like, as hard as it is, I'm going to try to let this go and then allow you to really bring healing to these places in my life.
Sometimes the first step is just saying, God, I can't let go. And I pray that you would, because I do think it requires the help of the Holy Spirit to, it's not just something you can do in your natural self. It requires you saying, because of what you went through, Jesus, for me, and the fact that you have forgiven me so much, who am I to hold on to this light offense compared to how I've offended you? You know, who am I? And so it requires just that surrender. And I think it is supernatural. And I was thinking about that verse where Jesus says, it's a really stark verse. It's hard. It says, at the end of the Lord's Prayer, he says, if you do not forgive your brother, then your father will not forgive you. I mean, that's like, that's heavy. You know, if you hold on to an offense of somebody to the point that you refuse to forgive, I mean, that's a dangerous thing. And I think that's because when you build that wall around your heart to protect yourself, you know, you put a wall up because I'm not going to let that person do that anymore. I'm going to protect myself. God's on the other side of that wall too, you know, and there's a certain amount of trust in God that you have to have by saying, I'm not going to keep that person from hurting me anymore. I'm going to trust you, Father, to keep that person from hurting anymore. And that's not to say, talking about toxic relationships, you need to stay in those relationships or anything, but holding on to an offense, holding on to something as, this is my way of not letting that person go, to kind of control them and keep them from doing something, letting go of that and saying, I'm going to let that between you and God, or you and that person, Father. You know, that's it's not like God saying, well, here's your punishment for not forgiving. It's that I can't get to your heart. You walled me out of your heart. You've walled my healing power. You've walled my love out of your heart because you've built this protection around yourself.
I mean, honestly, if you think about it, we're becoming a judge of our own heart. And so in a way, you're kicking God off of his own throne and saying, I can do it better than you. And we can't. Like, we can look at our world today when people who are in power, they can't handle that. You know, the world's crumbling in front of us. And it's all because we have tried to decide that we can do things better than God, even when it comes to forgiveness, even when it comes to offense, and say, I can judge this better than you can. And in reality, it's like, no, you can't. Like Jesus took on every single offense, every single hurt, every single thing that this world has dealt with and will deal with. And he still looked at it in the eye and said, I still love you and forgive you. And we're not willing, we cannot do that on our own. And so I think that to think that we know better than God is so foolish. And because he's already shown us that he's capable. He's capable of looking at it and looking at his enemies and saying, I know what you're not doing is not right, but I will still love you. And I will still speak truth into you. And if you want, I have a place for you in my house. And like, he is inviting his own persecutors into his own home. And that to me is like such a beautiful image.
And I think it's also a show of strength. And I think sometimes, especially guys, or I'll say again for myself, I don't want to let something go because it might be considered a sign of weakness, you know, a sign of weakness. But you think about what Jesus did, what he took on, and it didn't crush him. I mean, that is a sign of strength. That's a sign of his indestructible life, you know. I think of the story of, it's an old story of a guy named Nicky Cruz and David. He was a preacher. He was famous back in the 80s. But I'll think of his name in a minute. But this preacher felt called out of the hills of Western Pennsylvania to go to New York City and work with the gangs, you know, New York City. And there was this one, he was working there for a while, and this one gang member that he kept reaching out to over and over and over again. And this gang member got tired of it and confronted him on the street, pulled a switchblade on him, threw him up against the wall, and said, I could cut you up into 1,000 pieces right now. David Wilkerson, that was his name, David Wilkerson, the preacher. He looked right at him in the eye and said, you could cut me up into 1,000 pieces and lay me in the street, and every single one of them will cry out that Jesus loves you. Mm. And that broke this kid, this tough street thug. That is what broke him, that willingness to be slapped, that willingness to be attacked, and that there was something deeper inside that was stronger than all of that, that can absorb it all, and with a smile on his face, with confidence in his eye, look and say, go ahead, do it. That's not going to stop power of what's inside. That's not going to stop what God is doing right now in your life. And it's a show of strength. But we see it as a sign of weakness to surrender. It's a sign of weakness to let a person have their will, a sign of weakness to give in. But if you know the strength that you have that's deeper than all of that, it's not. It's the exact opposite.
Man, gosh, I could go on forever about this. But before we leave, what is one encouragement or advice you would want to give people about this before we leave?
I think what you said, you know, to invite God into the situation, because it's a lot of stuff that we can't handle on our own. You know, if you're feeling like God's dealing with you on that situation, he's not just throwing an assignment in front of you and saying, you know, you got to sort this out or we're not good together anymore. He's inviting you into something he's doing in your life, something that he's going to give you the strength and the direction to do. And so I would say that step is just to say, okay, Lord, show me where my offenses are. Show me. I think sometimes myself, I fill my daily life with so much media or entertainment of one kind or another. I don't even know what's going on in my heart sometimes. Just saying, God, you know, just getting alone and getting into the quiet and saying, God, show me what's there. Is there anything toxic inside of me that's messing up my relationships with you or with other people? And saying, I need you to tell me step by step what to do next, Jesus. I need you to give me direction. I need you to give me courage.
Well, I appreciate you coming on here and not only sharing just the word of the Lord with us, but sharing a piece of what you're walking through in this, because I think there's so much power of vulnerability. And so I hope that people can walk away from this specific topic in a way where they feel a balm on their heart. I hope that there's healing through this and that they can understand that we do not have to live a life covered in hurt and offenses, but to know that Jesus is there and he has already carried us through those things. And so I hope that people feel challenged. I hope people feel encouraged genuinely by this, because I feel like a lot of times we can be boggled down by this topic. Mm-hmm. I know that they're going to be already just so encouraged by what you said, because there's so many good nuggets that were just really shared. And so I thank you for your willingness to say yes to this and to take your time to join me on this podcast, and I'm excited for people to hear this.
Well, I really appreciate you inviting me to this. This is my first time doing a podcast. It was a great experience, but I also feel challenged. I feel like that you invited me to do this, whether you intended to or not, the Lord has used that to bring to head something in my own life that I feel inspired to deal with, and I look forward to dealing with today. You can hold me to account on that next time you see me, asking me if I went that day and talked to my friend. But yeah, I feel like this has been a good thing. I feel challenged, and I feel like the Lord is leading me in that. And so that's been good all the way around.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. And I will be on here with a new person talking about something really incredible. Y'all stay tuned.